April 2011. This month in Control System Security, we bring back the panel format with Jonathan Polley of Red Tiger Security and Brian Singer of Kinexus. The three of us discuss what security technology we think will have a big impact in the ICS community in the next 2 to 5 years. Hear the pros and cons of each technology and our best guesses on the percentage of penetration each of those technologies will have. This month in Control System Security is brought to you by Schweitzer Engineering Labs. SEL designs powerful and manageable user-based access controls for both serial and Ethernet control system networks. Learn more about the SEL 3025 SCADA Shield and the SEL 3620 Ethernet Security Gateway or other SEL security products today at selinc.com/cybersecurity. And by Waterfall Security Solutions. Would you like to sleep better at night? Waterfall's unidirectional security gateways physically segregate your control and SCADA networks from all other networks and absolutely prevent access to your critical assets. Waterfall enables easy compliance with NERC SIP, CFATS, NIST, and other industrial and infrastructure protection regulations. Learn more at waterfall-security.com. Joining me on the phone are Brian Singer. He is a principal consultant with Kinexus, and Jonathan Polley, who is a founder and principal consultant with Red Tiger Security. Hi, guys.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Hey, how's it going, Dale?
I should note that Jonathan's calling us from halfway around the world, so there might be a little delay, and we do appreciate him participating at this late hour over there. Jonathan, why don't I start with you? Kind of the topic of this session is to look at technologies that we think we're going to see a lot more in the future, security technologies, that is, and which ones will have the biggest impact and which ones are getting the biggest buzz. So why don't you throw out the first category of a product that you'd like to talk about?
Okay. Well, the first one that really seems to be making a difference is application whitelisting or HIPS products. We've seen HIDs, post-intrusion detection systems, for quite a while now. In fact, we're actually starting to see HIDs in some of our assessment work. But the problem we saw with HIDs was that it really didn't do anything to stop the execution of malware or malicious software on the machines. And so while they would catch it many times, we still don't see the level of aggressiveness in keeping up with the SIM and actually watching the logs. So what happens is, you know, the HIDs agent will catch that something launched that shouldn't have launched on the machine, and there's a log entry in the security event management console, but you know, no one's actually reviewing the logs and watching the console on a fast enough process to actually do anything about it. So it's kind of a last-ditch effort, I think, that we've seen over the years. To at least have something that can detect that something malicious is around the machine. But the last couple of years, we've seen gravitation towards HIPS, post-intrusion prevention software, and application whitelisting technology being deployed in SCADA. And once you get over the tuning process, it seems to do a better job than HIDs and will restrain unwanted software from actually even executing on the machine. So it seems to be doing a much better job from our perspective. But we still don't see HIDs or HIPS or application whitelisting at a large percentage of the installations we were doing our assessments. I think we've only seen them maybe 5% of the time. So I think it's still on an early adoption curve.
Would that technology have made your list? Is that something you expect to see a lot more of in the next 1 to 3 years?
Yeah, I mean, kind of to echo what Jonathan was saying there, I mean, it certainly offers a lot of benefits, and we're seeing a lot of good things out of those types of technologies. You know, I'm surprised he'd even say 5%. I've talked to a lot of vendors, and a lot of vendors are starting to include that in products or include it as an option for products. But they really haven't seen a very broad adoption of those yet either. And it is good as we're starting to see it. I think We are seeing it proliferate to the network boundaries and borders a little more. I'm not seeing it go down much lower than that at the current time, but it certainly does offer a lot of possibility. It would make the list in that regards. The only thing that I'm kind of cautious about is, you know, what we're seeing in the attack profiles lately is, you know, there really are not a lot. There are things that people do to compromise the system, but once on the system, they're still using, you know, valid protocols, valid execution, valid commands, valid applications, and those are things that whitelisting has a tough time picking up. It does raise the bar, but I do think we're going to have to improve in a few other areas too on that.
Well, I guess I'd probably be more on Jonathan's side on that one. I'm very bullish on this technology. In fact, when we're working with vendors, it's always on our list of things they need to do. Now, it depends on where they are in their program in terms of the prioritization. But I think when you see the vendor get involved with this, it makes it a much more palatable solution. And I just kind of wrote down, I did a little search. So we're seeing CoreTrace Bouncer being supported by Emerson, their Ovation system. They have partnerships with Industrial Defender, which kind of extends them to ABB, GE, and Itron, and then Wonderware. And then the other one I've seen is McAfee has been deployed on Invensys Foxborough. They just recently, a couple weeks ago or last week, announced that they're on the Siemens system that was involved with Stuxnet, the Windows components of that, as well as Schweitzer. Have either of you found any other partnerships like that I've missed?
You've covered most of the ones I've heard of or talked to at some point. And you know, again, I actually think we need to go back a bit. I'm not taking a side on this because certainly I'm very bullish about the technology as well. There's no question that it offers a lot. I think the only statement I wanted to make there was to be cautious because we've actually bypassed the whitelisting stuff on a number of occasions by using control protocols.
Right. Jonathan, do you see this whitelisting or HIPS technology replacing antivirus, or is it going to be running both in the near term and maybe a few years out?
Yeah, I've actually already seen some of the antivirus companies start to embrace application whitelisting as an optional module in their endpoint security offering, and one of those is McAfee. McAfee's latest antivirus agent has the option when you purchase it to perform application whitelisting in addition to the antivirus functions, which kind of makes you wonder, like, you know, why would you need antivirus if you had the application whitelisting capability? But I think it's just a direction that McAfee is taking to go in that direction.
Yeah, I almost wonder if antivirus will stick around longer than it really should, just because no one wants to make the call to take it off. If you ever got a virus and you took it off, you could get a big black eye, both as someone being in charge of the system security or someone making a recommendation. Sticking on McAfee for a second, and I know Brian, you had a long history at Rockwell Automation. McAfee recently bought VxWorks, and one thing we haven't seen yet is any of this whitelisting or HIPS technology down to the PLC level. Am I being overly optimistic that we might see that in the next couple of years, or do you think that's still a long way off?
I think optimistic couple of years. We might start seeing some early generation of that. I have spoken with a couple of companies that are looking at doing that type of technology at the controller layer. You know, it's still very, you know, it's very early in their conceptual process. So I would think we're probably within a year to 2 years, and maybe outside three, of seeing some technologies like that available.
But what do you think about that, Jonathan?
You know what? I think it's due time that the embedded device world start to think about their devices as, you know, purpose-built machines with operating systems instead of being able to sit in the dark and get away with putting out products that don't have the basic set of security features that our operating systems have today on them. Like when we talk to people at a management layer about, you know, the gross lack of security in PLCs and RTUs, what we try to tell them is, look, you have a device here that's controlling, you know, fired heater equipment, has safety implications, certainly could have loss of life involved. And these devices have no authentication, no level, very little level of auditing, there's no thought to, you know, antivirus or even basic things like a common syslog format to log forensically what's happened to them. So I think the things that, you know, we've taken for granted for in terms of security that we have on our desktop computer has orders of magnitude better security on them, and we use our desktop computers for email and things, and then devices that are most critical to our infrastructure have the least amount of security. So I think that it's going to take one or two strong vendors to start offering PLCs and RPUs into the embedded devices with those types of capabilities built into them, and then it's almost like shaming the other ones into doing it. And that's how we saw it happen in, you know, the 1990s when, you know, one of the first PLCs started shipping with, you know, Ethernet interfaces, and the others said, okay, well, we have an Ethernet interface too, and then slowly but surely they all did. So I think that if we can have one or two strong vendors come out with security baked into the embedded device, which I think it would be easier to do for a PLC or RTU than a PC, because the PLC or RTU only does one specific thing. I think it would be an easier task to design, you know, whitelisting for that type of device. But I think once the first vendor does it, then we'll see, like, the cards start to fall and the dominoes will fall into motion, and the rest will start to have to either, you know, OEM a solution, or they'll have to just spend some money in R&D and actually bake it into their product.
Well, I hope you're right. When McAfee put out their announcement about having whitelist support for the Siemens products, the WinCC and the other products, PC-based products affected by Stuxnet, I did talk to the McAfee people and tried to talk to the Siemens people, and it just seems to line up on the McAfee side with their interest in this and their purchase of VxWorks. But then if you look on the Siemens side, they barely have made an announcement on this and kind of refuse to talk to anyone. So it might take a forward-thinking vendor to kind of lead the way, like you said, and then the others will be dragged along. But let's finish up this topic. So if we look at SCADA and DCS application vendors, let's say in 2 years, what percentage of them do you think will be supporting at least one whitelist product? So if you buy their product, you can say it comes with this whitelist application loaded. I'll start with you, Brian. What do you think in terms of a percentage in 2 years?
In terms of a percentage of companies that will offer it as part of the core solution, or ones that will offer it as an add-on?
Either one, as a core solution,
okay,
or an add-on.
Yes. Well, yeah, I think that out of, like, the list we discussed earlier in kind of the large vendor community, I would say probably 75% to 80% of them will at least have some offering, and that would be my guess, because most of them all have talked at least some point at this about that type of technology. Whether they do it through partnerships or as an integrated solution, yeah, will kind of remain to be seen, but I definitely think it's the way that most of them are heading.
Jonathan, what about you?
I would tend to agree. I agree with Brian there. Maybe a little bit lower, at around 60%. But I think that's a good range to think about it, because all of the major vendors are already, if not already offering it, it's kind of on their roadmap. In terms of what customers are requesting, I think it's something that could meet one or more compliance things for NERC SIP compliance and CFATS compliance, because they already have to have malware prevention on the machine anyway. And then if it can also be hooked into the system to do other things like change control, because, you know, it would detect if some change was made, you know, maybe it could also do change control and whitelisting. Now you're getting extra capabilities for compliance. So I think it's a good direction. I think that, you know, 2 years from now, it'll be, I think, probably 60% to 80% of the vendors will, it'll be just one of the things that you can ask for when you purchase the system.
Well, it sounds like we're all in agreement because I had written down 75%. So no controversy there. Brian, why don't we move to another security technology? What's another security technology that you expect to see getting traction in the control system space in the next couple of years?
Yeah, there's one that I'll say it's on the one-way data diode side. And to be candidly honest, this is a technology I was rather skeptical of when we first started hearing about it several years ago. Mostly because, you know, the difficulty of actually having only a one-way communication and still some reliability in communications there in process control, those tend to be fairly negative things to not know what was sent, right? Or not have a surety of it. But, you know, we've done a lot of testing of safety systems and other controllers over the past few years during projects and just internal research and things. And, you know, one of the things we've seen, let's focus on the SIS side in particular. Looking at those components, you know, we've tested safety instrumented systems, and we've not found many cases where we could ever cause a device through network traffic alone to either fail to trip or to fail positive. In other words, it won't actually do what it's supposed to do if the process goes dangerous or goes outside of a normal operation. And, you know, but the problem we've seen is that even though we couldn't necessarily cause them to not fail, we could certainly stop them from, we could certainly cause nuisance trips. And the other thing we could potentially do is if there was communication with the device, we could go in and interact with the memory of the device or change the programs on the device. And then at that point, certainly, we could actually create a situation where the safety system may not operate. So if you look at that, look at what's happening in the nuclear industries, look at what's happening in the power industries, look what's happening on the safety side, and as we're starting to learn more about safety systems and the regulatory issues associated with them, there is a high need for being able to get data out of devices without exposing them to being compromised or modified in any other way. So I'm starting to come around on the idea of one-way data diodes. I think we're already seeing a pretty heavy influence from the nuclear and the fossil side. People that want to start using that type of technology being pushed from a regulatory perspective, and I think it's going to become even a bigger issue for a lot of the rest of process control as well, because certainly you've got other standards and you have other activities out there promoting the idea of centralized alarm management, which requires network connectivity, and getting rid of some of the things we've been using for a long time, like light panels that are very reliable. And if you do that, as an attacker, the first thing I think of is, okay, great, you got centralized alarm management, I'll shut your alarms down, game over. Well, if you're using technology like this, we have ways to still push data out of systems without necessarily compromising the components behind it. So I think we'll probably see that technology, even though it's not quite as much flash as the whitelisting, I definitely think it's going to be pushed more in those three areas we discussed.
Brian, like you, I was skeptical about the one-way getting any traction in this space, and you were focused mainly on the kind of the safety to the control system border, which is something where it actually hasn't been used that much, but I think has great promise. Where we're seeing it a lot and where it's gotten traction, especially in the nuclear industry, is in the control system to corporate network border. That seems to be where they're really pushing it. I think you identified an area of growth for the future. But one of the reasons why I was skeptical early on, and Jonathan, I'll kind of talk about your experience here as well, is that a lot of times when we see the interface between the corporate network and the control system network, there's a lot of holes going in a lot of directions there that wouldn't support a one-way product type of use. Are you seeing the same, and do you think owner-operators are going to clean up that communication so that one-way is feasible in a significant percentage of deployments?
I certainly hope so. Although, based on the assessments that we have done, they have the capability of getting very close to the capabilities of a data diode just by having proper network segmentation and tight firewall rules, and they're not even doing that, right? So, at least one positive that will come out of it is if they wanted to deploy a data diode, it would force them to clean up their network architecture in such a way to allow that technology to do its job correctly. But I'm very pessimistic that a large percentage of systems would embrace that. I think that you're going to find the most critical systems You know, the people that really want to be able to sleep at night will probably embrace that technology and do whatever it takes to make it work. But the far majority of installations probably won't go down that path. That's just my gut feel.
That's sort of what I've seen, too, and we've actually had a number of clients, because the one-way vendors have been very active in this space, come to us and say, oh, what do you think of this? We'd like to use this. And, you know, you point out their firewall rule set to them, and and it's very clear that it would take major, major changes, which would be good changes, to get there. So we do have a number of participants in this. One of them is a sponsor of the podcast, Waterfall, out of Israel. And what we're seeing is the ones that are most active are developing application interfaces so they can mimic the client and server on both sides. So, for example, they can pass historian data from the Pi server or GE or Siemens or Matricon. So Waterfall is one of those. Fox IT has been doing some work with Matricon. They're a company out of the Netherlands for passing OPC data from the control system to the corporate network. OWL is another one working with the Pi Historian. They're based out of the U.S. And then I was surprised as I looked, there's a vendor in China that's got a product. There's another one in Israel, Talis in France. So there's a lot of one-way solutions out there. But the ones we're seeing, I guess, most active in the control system space is Waterfall, Fox, and OWL. Brian, are you seeing any vendor more than others right now in the space?
The ones you just listed are the same ones I've seen. Probably out of the list there, not to pull favoritism or anything, but the one I hear the most is probably Waterfall in there. Again, I think that Jonathan's comment earlier about the adoption of it and certainly on the firewall rules is absolutely right, and we always have to be cautious about what technologies we adopt into a space when we don't necessarily even close the barn door after the horse is gone, right? But that said, I guess we'll have to see what the industry does in terms of adoption to see if any other players really rise to the scene. But the ones that are out there so far have been active and have been pushing it. Those are the names that I hear. I would imagine that's probably the way it's going to stay for a while until we see either a broad adoption or some other activity.
So let's try to put a number on this. And if we look now, let's say, at real critical infrastructure, so systems that affect a lot of people or are highly dangerous if something goes wrong, what percentage of those critical infrastructure industries, let's say in the U.S., do we expect to be implementing one way 2 years from now? Jonathan, any thoughts on that? I know that's a tough question.
I still think it's fairly low. I think maybe 10 to 20%. I think that for the reasons I said before, the companies that we're working with, most of them think that if they were to just clean up their network environment with tighter firewall rules and better network segmentation, they can get probably 95% close to what they could get with the data diode.
Mm-hmm.
But I said there is a smaller subset out there that has so much to lose that they will spend whatever it takes in terms of time and effort and money to know without a shadow of doubt that technically and scientifically the data cannot move back the other direction. So, but I think that window or percentage of the industry as a whole is fairly low.
And the other thing too, as you know, everyone here does assessments and consultancy and such, even if it's an excellent product and an excellent solution for a lot of owner-operators, there's still the question of, is it what they need to do now, or do they have a lot of other things they need to fix first, and then they can get to this? Brian, what would you put down for a percentage that would be deploying this?
Well, I think if you look at industry as a whole, I'm going to be in agreement with Jonathan, 5, 10, 15% maybe. If you look at it by vertical, I would expect that in the nuclear and in the fossil side, we'll probably see it's hard to put a number, but let's say maybe a little higher, 30 to 35% will have implemented at least something in that space. I think if you look at the oil and gas, there is need or interest or there's things that they could use that technology for, but I still would put the number fairly low at adoption over the next couple of years. Certainly it's out there. but we'll have to just see again purpose fit. What is it going to actually serve? What use is it going to be for them to be a motivator to actually install it?
Yeah, I think we're in agreement. I was going to say 10% or less, but if it even gets that amount of traction, that's significant because we're talking about actual deployments as opposed to availability. And I hadn't thought about putting it your way, Brian, but you're right. We're probably going to see much higher percentages in certain sectors and much, almost zero percentage in other sectors. So I think that's a real good analysis.
Right.
Okay, let's hit one more technology, and I'll pull this one out. This is one that I'm not sure we're all crazy about, but I think we're going to see in the near future. And this is this concept of sharing data to mobile devices or sharing data and or control to mobile devices. And just today I saw Matt Franz tweeted on about the GoToMyHMI.com site. And there is actually a product, GoToMyHMI, that talks about the beauty of being able to control a process from the beach in Hawaii on your Android or iPhone. So I think that's a product that we're going to see a lot more, and I think the initial reaction by most security professionals is horror, but I think we need to look a little bit at how different is this really from the laptop environment, and if we limit it, and I guess there's a significant difference between providing data that might be useful but have little risk if it's compromised, if the confidentiality is lost, and providing any amount of control to these devices. So I guess let me go to you, Jonathan. What are you thinking about these products? Do you think there's a large difference between providing access via mobile phone versus a laptop? And is there any case you would see where you should allow control from a mobile device?
My biggest concern is that mobile devices, smartphones, tablet PCs, iPads and such, are easily lost or stolen. And the problem is, if that device is lost, you have some part of your critical infrastructure, the ability to get back into the system and control it, in a device that can be picked up by the wrong hand. So that's my biggest concern. I have seen a few installations whereby they're deploying iPads out to executives and supervisors, even some technicians. And all the iPads do is basically have the Citrix-infused interface on them and allow them to remote into the system as if they would with their laptop. And they've built some custom interfaces that size correctly for the screen, but basically it's just moving the mouse and strokes of the system over several authentication processes into a thin frame environment. So if the device is lost, the only thing that's on the device is basically a mobile applet for Citrix. There is no code, there is no HMI, there is no data tags, there is nothing on the device that would give away anything about the system. So in that case, I would feel comfortable in some cases going down that path whereby the mobility, flexibility, and ease of use complements the operations and business use case while complementing the similar need for security. So if someone could deploy a solution like that whereby the mobile device or the tablet has zero process control code on it, zero data tags, there is nothing on the device other than basically a way to connect back to the system. And there is multiple checkpoints, hopefully with multi-factor authentication deployed, then I would feel comfortable with that. And that's my standpoint, but I'll throw it back to you guys to see if that's controversial or not.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, Brian, what do you think of those comments, and what do you think? Is this a trend that we're going to need to secure in the future?
Well, it's kind of the age-old tradition in security. Technology is going to change whether we're shocked and awed and horrified by it or not. So I do think that that it's going to definitely move that way. You know, Apple's moving us towards the PC-less world, and so they're seeing lots of more of the mobile devices and the, you know, the idea that you don't have to carry a laptop around with you anymore. It's where it's going, right? Now, Jonathan's perspective was interesting. I had not actually thought about the idea of just virtualizing the sessions on it. That actually makes a lot of sense to me from a security perspective as well. Because, you know, the first thing I think of, and this may be weighted a bit because, you know, I've worked on some investigations of incidents and things, but the proliferation of information when trying to piece something back together or figure out what something is something that happened, you know, if you have little devices all over the place, you know, I have a smartphone, an iPad, and all these other components too, and a lot of operators will as well. If you start distributing this stuff out to lots of locations, your ability to find that equipment, to figure out what was done on it, to put the story back together, that's going to be hampered or very difficult. And certainly, it's going to be very difficult to identify the devices themselves that may have actually sent the instruction in many cases. So there's a lot of things I'm concerned about just upon the distribution of critical communication points that are required for operation, and the fact that you could interact with them from anywhere. Now, again, though, that said, it's where it's going to go. So we as security professionals need to start thinking about how do we inventory, catalog, keep track of, and then otherwise monitor these devices and what they're doing in the environment to make sure that that we're not just increasing our potential footprint of vulnerabilities.
Yeah, I think getting in front of this is the key, because as we've seen, once something gets deployed and used, it's really hard to change it. It's really hard to pull back.
Right.
And we've seen, although I don't think it's nearly as popular, we saw something like this with the PLCs, where the maintenance departments wanted to be able to look at them and change configs from anywhere on the corporate network. So even though the control-based part of the SCADA or DCS was all done from the control system, we were seeing cases where maintenance engineers from any laptop that they either VPN'd in or any laptop on the corporate network could actually, you know, change ladder logic if they wanted to, or change, you know, change network card performance configuration parameters. So, and once that was in place, it was really hard to pull back on that ease of use. So I think, I guess from our perspective, we're trying with people who ask us this, we're being real careful to say, don't say no, because you're going to lose. Just try to find a way to do something that makes the risk acceptable to the organization, really focusing on providing access to data using a lot of tools that Jonathan talked about. So let's hit one last number before we close this session. Let's try to put a percentage on, let's say, number of installations that are serving up at least data to mobile devices 2 years from now. And I'll go first since I put you guys on the spot. I would say one-third, about 35%, will be serving up data to remote devices in 2 years. Brian, I'll go to you next. What do you think?
I would have to break it down by vertical again. I would say you're probably right. We're going to be in a pretty heavy proliferation. But if you go to your remote power plants or things of that nature, they really don't even have that much modern equipment anyway, and they don't have that much control gear. So the chance that they're going to really push heavy towards using that, you might see one or two at a plant. But if you go into industries like automotive or, you know, pharmaceuticals, where there's a heavy proliferation of those components, I would say we're going to see a very heavy distribution of that technology within the next couple of years.
Okay, and Jonathan, we'll end with you. What do you think?
I think it's going to be at least a third, if not moving closer to half, because we're working with multiple different verticals. We were just working with the oil and gas company, a major oil and gas company that has now has a major campaign to allow any of their employees to select which hardware. It's up to them on what they want to use remotely, whether it be a laptop, a tablet, an iPad. They're saying basically they don't care at this point. They got tired of mandating that everyone has a CrackBerry, BlackBerry, or everybody has the same hardware, and they said, you know what, we can't control anymore. You guys pick the hardware you want, and they basically have built their leverage, their infrastructure on you know, thin client computing and Citrix and Citrix-like technology, terminal services-like technology to serve up the applications to the user based on the user's role in the company. When they attach to the system remotely, they will be painted a screen on whatever device they're carrying with them that will have the applications and data that they need. So I think in the more companies that we're talking to about remote access, they're all saying that you know, these new tablet devices and smartphones and smaller laptops like the MacBook Air and things are kind of pushing them towards allowing their employees to get the information, the applications, and the data they need to do their job in new formats. So I think it will be at least a third, probably closer to a half. Mm-hmm.
I can't argue with that. I think it's really going to be based on just how fast they can ramp up and do it. Because whatever that number is 2 years from now, I think the curve will be pretty steep in terms of increasing percentage, and who knows where we'll be in 4 or 5 years. It might be closer to 75, 80, 90%. It's just how fast do they get there? Okay, mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank my guests. I think we hit the three major areas where we're going to see certainly growth in security technologies in this space. But with me was Brian Singer with Conexus and Jonathan Polley with Red Tiger Security. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dale.
Well, that's the show for April 2011. Next week, that's the first week of May, I'll be at ICS JWG presenting on some of our research results there, as well as networking and learning all I can about what's new in control system security. So pay attention to our blog and our Twitter feed at digitalbond.com. And I'll have the mobile podcast unit with me, so maybe I'll record some sound and give you a little bonus podcast. This month in control system security was brought to you by SEL Cybersecurity Solutions, sensible, manageable, scalable. Learn more at selinc.com/cybersecurity and by Waterfall Security Solutions, security for industrial control networks. They're at waterfall-security.com. As always, if you have any suggestions for future topics or future guests, please send them to us at info@digitalbond.com. And until then, we'll see you next month in Control System Security.